2005. We have four issues, four bills up for public hearing today. And for lack of a better way of knowing how to do this, we'll start at the top and go down the ladder. So with that, we have House Bill 2875, and I think we have Mr. Sussman here to represent the...
Could you move it to the bottom? Christine is down in another committee. And we'll be up here shortly. We're booked in three committees this afternoon.
It's your bill.
Yeah, but she's one who prepared the written testimony.
I
can wing it if she can submit the written testimony later.
I'm sure Mr. Kosasan can probably give your testimony for you.
Adam, on House Bill 2875. We'll hold till you're available, Anita.
Good afternoon, Adam.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Adam Sussman. I'm with the Water Resources Department. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 2875. What this measure would do is provide districts the ability to make a temporary change in point of diversion in the event that an emergency prevents the district from diverting water from its original point of diversion. And I believe, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, when you hear from the Oregon Water Resources Congress, they can probably give you a much better idea than I can about the specifics of these kinds of events and why this eventuality would come to bear. I just wanted the committee to understand that under current law, there are lots of tools to make temporary changes to existing water rights within irrigation districts, but there is no tool in current law that allows a change in point of diversion in the event of an emergency. And I also wanted the chair and members of the committee to understand that whenever you make a change in a water right, whether it be for an emergency or other, that the statute does provide various sideboards in terms of the department's ability to approve that change, and those would include ensuring that the change does not cause injury to those that hold existing water rights and to ensure that the water right that's being modified is not enlarged in any way. This provision would simply modify ORS 537-570 sub 2 and allow that emergency authorization opportunity and still maintain all those sideboards and tools that I just mentioned. We believe, the department believes, that this bill provides a necessary emergency tool for districts and does not in any way diminish the existing statutory protections to existing water right holders or the state's water resources.
Are there questions for Mr. Sussman? House Bill 2875.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One question, if I may.
Please.
You may have covered this earlier in your testimony, and if so, I apologize for being late. But I'm wondering if there's a definition of emergency in the statutes that we're dealing with here.
Mr.
And
Chair.
The answer is yes or no, and I'll accept that.
No.
There isn't.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Then I'm concerned, Mr. Chair, about what the bill means if there's no definition of an emergency. Mr. Chair, but the point I was trying to make was that if there's no definition of an emergency, then this bill is essentially meaningless, except that it allows the district to divert water from a point that's other than the authorized place for some reason.
I guess it would authorize the department to determine that it was or was not an emergency. I mean, it has to be cleared through the department, and the department didn't think it was an emergency. it wouldn't seem to me that there would be any grounds for them to take action.
Yeah, Mr. Chair?
Please.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bonner, I believe that's correct. I think what we would do is sort of take the legislative history here and the intent, and through our administrative rules would likely craft a definition of emergency.
Thank you. That takes care of my problem, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative. Appreciate it. Adam, do I understand correctly that in this drought season while my irrigation districts can't change their point of diversion if the emergency is there's no water in the river where they divert at and they want to move it upstream someplace where there is some water?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I think we're talking a little bit of apples and oranges here. The apples, which is this bill, would be something to evaluate or a tool for a catastrophic event, landslide. We do have other tools, other statutory tools, and if the county that we're talking about has been declared under a drought declaration by the governor, there are water right transfer tools that would allow them to move points of diversion and in fact even replace, say, a surface water right with a groundwater right. But again, on the sideboard of all of those changes, we would want to make sure that we weren't injuring existing water rights. Okay.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Mr. Sussman? Thank you very much, Adam. I think we've got a couple of other people signed up. First of all, Christina McNitt from the Oregon Water Resource Congress, I think. And I gather you're supposed to be testifying in two different places, and I think there was a misunderstanding as to what I would do. But I see you here, so we'll...
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Yeah, today would be a great day to be a clone or have a clone. For the record, my name is Christina McNitt. I'm representing the Oregon Water Resources Congress. And with me to my left is Don Chandler. He's the board chair of Farmers Irrigation District in Hood River. And he's here to provide some anecdotal stories about emergencies and help answer some questions and talk about why the Oregon Water Resources Congress developed this bill. Under district transfer statutes today, ORS 540-570 sub 2, currently provides that a district with a manager may temporarily change the point of diversion or appropriation combined with a change in place of use, change in point of diversion, or change a primary right to a supplemental right under several conditions, those being that the land receiving the water is within the district boundaries, that other terms of the permit or certificate remain the same, including the beneficial use of the water and the number of acres to which the water is applied, and that the diversion is provided with a proper fish screen if required by OWRD. House Bill 2875 would add the ability of a district, again with a manager, to change the point of diversion in the event of an emergency that prevents the district from diverting water from its authorized point of diversion. As with all other provisions in ORS Chapter 540, district transfers are limited to one irrigation season and may not result in injury to any existing water right. In fact, the department may condition, reject, or even revoke a temporary transfer at any time to the extent necessary to avoid injury if the department finds the transfer is causing injury to an existing water right holder. Thank you for your consideration of this bill. I look forward to answering your questions and having Mr. Chandler supply his experience at Farmers.
Yes, please.
Don Chandler, Chairman of Farmers Irrigation, Hood River Basin, Hood River City of Hood River, and Hood River County. Our district last year had a catastrophic failure of our flume, which is a high flume that carries water into the district into our main canal. We had an earthquake in June that took our flume out in a small area, which we took care of very rapidly. In mid-July, subject to the same earthquake that happened in June, our flume, where it was about 20 feet high, failed. And at that time, there was no way we could finish repairing that flume within the irrigation season. So instead of repairing that flume, we decided to borrow money and repair the thing by piping that system. We have a new screening system that was designed for pipe, but we didn't have the resources at the time to do the piping. So through emergency, we decided to borrow money and pipe that section instead of replacing the old flume. During that time, we needed to change our point of diversion. Actually, we had a landowner who was very cooperative in letting us cross his property with a pipe and installing major electrical facilities so we could pump that water out of the river. We had the ODF&W put a screening facility together for us, which we pumped out of to protect the fish. We also had permits from the Fish and Wildlife people, from the Corps of Engineers, and all the necessary people to do this diversion. And so before you today, we were asking for those points of diversion to be able to be changed for the sheer fact of those catastrophic things that happen that are beyond our control. Thank you.
Mr. Chandler, am I correct then that had this bill been in place, you'd have been able to have solved some problems?
We would have been able to do that with just notifying the Oregon Department of Water Resources and doing those channels, and we would have been able to do that more efficiently.
Okay. Was this the reason for proposing this bill?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this is our case study right here, Farmers Irrigation District, and the challenges they went through following that series of earthquakes.
Right.
Too.
Okay. Further questions?
Mr. Chair, maybe this is the obvious, but I would hate not to state it, but in cases of irrigation, sometimes just a delay of 3 days in getting water to a crop could be a crop failure. I mean, these are very timely, expensive, high emotional events, and we want to provide a tool to avoid catastrophe that would multiply if we couldn't move a diversion.
It's certainly in the best interests of the citizens of the state of Oregon to not have a crop failure in some locality simply because these tools are not available or not readily available.
Yes, and in the Hood River Valley, agriculture is the number one job provider in that community.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And Mr. Myers, so from Water Watch, with us too. Good afternoon, Doug.
Afternoon, Mr. Chair. I'm Doug Myers, representing Water Watch. Karen Russell sends her regrets, so you're going to get the second team again. Me. She's putting her kid's pet rodent to sleep following several operations, may I say. So this is she's trying to explain this to her children. House Bill 2875 would allow irrigation districts to temporarily change their point of diversion for one irrigation season in the event of an emergency. And under current law, temporary district transfers such as the one proposed in this bill are only required to have fish screens if required by Water Resources Department. We'd be okay with the bill if... First, we have a question. How often does this happen? Second, we think that the determinee for whether fish screens or bypass devices and fish passage should be determined by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife rather than the Water Resources Department. We are perfectly comfortable with allowing the Water Resources Department to determine that it is an emergency, whatever, earthquake, slide, you name it. They're the ones with the expertise in that, but it's ODF&W who makes the determination, as we would like to see ODF&W make the determination as to whether fish screening or bypass devices and fish passage is required. Irrigation season often is the place during the season when fish start moving. And this bill would allow an irrigation district to, without adequate passage, for 6 months in the summertime, to block fish passage. We would be okay with the bill if, one, it would be ODF&W, Fish and Wildlife Department, to make that determination, and two, to require bypass devices and fish passages. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Question, I guess, Doug, why do you feel the necessity to put this jurisdiction over to the ODF&W instead of Water Resource Department? Why would the Water Resource Department not be capable of making this determination?
Mr. Chair and members, it's because where the expertise lies. As far as I know, Water Resources Department does not have a fish person on staff to advise them of things like this. It's up to the ODF&W in many cases to advise the Water Resources Commission as to fish passage requirements and screening, and that's where their expertise lies. I mean, they have people that are paid by the citizens of the state to make these decisions.
I'm going to ask Mr. Sussman to come up and answer a question for me while you're here, Doug. In this particular situation that we're looking at, if Doug has a copy of the amendments, or if you're not familiar with them, maybe he could let you have a look at them there. I guess my question, Adam, is would this not be something that if there was any question, the department would consult with the Fish and Wildlife on anyway? What would be your normal protocol in this type of situation?
Well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that's exactly our protocol, that we consult with the Department of Fish and Wildlife and seek input about whether or not, as the law is currently written, whether or not a fish screen is required, and they provide us that input. So as far as that aspect of the amendment, leaving it as it is, I think is working. I have not heard that it's not working, and we have a very good and cooperative relationship with the Department of Fish and Wildlife to require those sorts of things when they're requested. But there's another part of the amendment that I think I just want to help the committee understand, and that is there's two parts here. One is about the fish screening part, which is already part of the current law, but then this amendment takes it another step, which is, I believe it says bypass devices and fish passage. That's not part of sort of the current structure of the law, as you will, under existing law, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has its own authority, own statutory authority over fish passage issues. And so really what I think what the committee is faced with based on this amendment is a question of whether we change the current law for all of these kinds of temporary transfers to add yet another element, which would be fish passage.
Thank you. And I guess, my concern with this is that when we're talking about something that's an emergency, I think we've heard testimony that a delay of, I think somebody said 3 days, but even the delay of a day may be of some significant detriment to a crop somewhere. And my experience, limited though it is that the more agencies that you involve in a process, the time to accomplish the project goes up geometrically according to the number of agencies that you've added. That would be my concern with it, Doug. I mean, it has to go through the Water Resource Department to begin with, I mean, because it is a change in the point of diversion. Adding another agency, I'm concerned as to whether or not there would be, and I've got to think about that a little bit. And I appreciate, you know, if you want sidebar conversations and, you know, in the office or something on that, or any comments you have otherwise on it.
No, I appreciate that offer.
Yeah. Chair Jensen, if I may add just one additional comment, and that is that we can ensure that if this measure were to move through the system and the department were to develop rules to implement it as we said we would, we can assure that we are notifying the Department of Fish and Wildlife when these requests are made. And again, it's not as if we get hundreds of them a year. It sounds like we might get one every few years. And so that would certainly provide them the opportunity to work on the ground under their current authority to ensure that adequate fish passage is provided.
Thank you. Thank you both. That's all I have. Is there any other questions? I appreciate very much your concerns, Doug.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. We'd like to work to make it so everybody's happy with it.
Thank you.
Okay. If we have no one else to testify, is there anyone else that didn't get on the sign-up sheet to testify on this? With that, then, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2875. And the Water Resource Congress said, you have someplace else you want to be now, or can I go down the line, or what do you want to do? Just go down the line. Anybody else that I'll inconvenience by going down the line? Okay. Thank you. With that, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2883, and would you explain this for us, Cindy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2883 directs the Water Resources Department to prepare an inventory of potential surface water sites, storage sites in the state. It appropriates $150,000 from general fund, and it declares an emergency effective upon passage. Therefore, it has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. Do we have Scott Ashcom of the Oregon Agricultural Alliance?
Mr. Chairman, Scott Ashcom of the Oregon Agricultural Alliance. Our organization supports House Bill 2883, and if this is the bill, I think it is. I'll try to explain what's behind it very briefly. I notice, Mr. Chairman, that your name is on this bill, and that prompts me to observe that this is one of the finest pieces of legislation yet in this session of legislature.
Maybe only equaled by the one that preceded it.
Well, You know that I had come down to the legislature every session since 1983 and tried to pass a bill to get Barry Norris working a little bit harder than he normally works over at the Water Resources Department. He's the state engineer. I was visiting with him over in 1980 or 1981 and happened to notice that he had a stack of reservoir surveys in his office, and they were heading to the archives. They were going to be eventually destroyed. And I said, what are these? And were there plans for reservoirs all across the state of Oregon, plans that had been conducted by engineers years and years ago, but they were perfectly good plans, engineered very well. And I didn't want to throw out this inventory site reservoir. So it started introducing bills down here. All of them, every single one of them, since 1981, 1983, supported by everybody. But the problem was they all had a little fiscal impact. This one's got $151,000 fiscal impact. Most of them died until the bill that you were associated with, Mr. Chairman. I believe it passed 6 years ago. Created a four-year program in water resources where they put together a technical advisory committee and they surveyed potential reservoir sites in the state of Oregon. That information was reported to the legislature at the beginning of the last session. Excellent report. What this bill does is just takes it to the next step and publishes the actual inventory itself of the reservoir sites, if I understand the process in the department. It's an excellent bill. We'd love for you to pass it. I've seldom met anybody opposed to it. The question has always just been the fiscal impact. So with that, we support the thing. Excellent idea. You're performing a great public service for the state of Warwick.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Scott?
Mr. Chair?
Whoops.
Scott walked away too quickly. Thank you. I just was writing the chair note, but I am curious if you know what the status is, and maybe Water Resources Department can answer this, but I did know that the governor put in a request for, I think it's about $450,000 to Congress to fund a similar type of study. So, you know, the question is, should we, if we get that money, then would we still need this bill, or would we would be saving some general fund money, obviously, if we get that money from Congress?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Representative Dingfelder, the governor is also doing an enlightened thing by trying to get some federal money. You know, you have small reservoirs, you have large reservoirs, what we were talking about, what we were contemplating in the passage of this measure was really small reservoirs, and reservoirs that the state would have no way of really justifying a large outlay of cash to design. The designs are already there. So that's what this bill deals with. I think that the governor's request for federal funding, it's a larger amount of money, but I think that it is for a review of reservoir sites and what maybe need to be done to maintain them properly for federal reservoirs, or reservoirs that the state operates in conjunction with the federal program, BOR Reservoir, Corps of Engineers Reservoir, certain irrigation districts. I believe that they deal with a different kind of reservoir, but they're both excellent ideas. And Barry Norris, a state engineer, frankly, they need all the money they can get. So I go back to the fiscal issue. It really comes down to whether or not they want to take the money out of the K-12 budget, you know, mental hospitals, so forth.
Thank you.
Federal dollars are always appreciated, I'm sure.
And I suppose the representative's obvious question at this point of the chair of the committee, am I willing to spend 2.5 teachers to do this?
Exactly.
Sorry, thanks.
I was going to refrain from asking you that question in public, but since you did it for me, that was great.
I would certainly welcome, responding to questions of that type, Representative. Thank you, Scott. I would make a point of observation, however, since the topic has come up in Governor's request of Congress for $450,000, that in order for the governor to spend that $450,000, he's going to have some authorization of this body. If it happens to be that comes when we're not in session, it would come before the E-Board. One of the things the chair would be trying to do, if we're not successful in getting $151,000, if that's the amount that's written here, when it goes to the Ways and Means process, would be to ask the Ways and Means process to fund it for a dollar, and then if any money, either federal or otherwise, grants from foundations of one form or another were to come in, there'd be a avenue there for it to fit into very nicely, and we could kind of proceed ahead with it, sort of thing. And you are right, this is something we've been talking about ever since I've been in the building, and I think for some of you, Scott, long before I've arrived in this building, that this has been something that has been talked about. I know my predecessor, who chaired this same committee, that was one of the agenda items that Representative Norris had during his tenure, and I would suspect it was an agenda item before Representative Norris appeared in the legislature. So it's been with us a long time, and we need to keep this in front of us. I do appreciate the governor's
trying to find money to deal with this, and I hope that he does. And somebody wants to testify while the chair's talking, and that might. Seeing the urgency with which this request is, please come.
Oh no, she's signaling to me.
She's signaling to you.
Yeah.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, my name is Amanda Rich, and I represent the Special Districts Association of Oregon. And for the record, I didn't want to testify while the chair was talking. I wanted Sandy to know that when you were finished, that I would like to just put on the record our support for this bill, and also state that I think that the idea of moving it forward and asking for an appropriation of a dollar in order to make the account available would be very important. And also just state on the record that SDAO and other associations that I work with are supporting the department's effort to get federal funds for this project, and we've sent in letters of support and are working with the delegation. So we're hoping that those federal dollars of which you speak will be coming in.
Thank you, Amanda. I'm not accusing you, and I please my apologies for the way I said that. At this point, Mr. Sussman.
Good afternoon again. For the record, Adam Sussman with the Water Resources Department. I think that was a pretty good lead-in to most of the things that I did want to cover. Of course, I do need to mention that the department has long supported this notion of an inventory, and I'll talk about what that would look like in a minute, but I just wanted to make it clear to the committee that the appropriation in this bill is not in the governor's recommended budget, and I think you all know that. One of the things I did want to mention is that Chair Jensen and others back in 1999 served on a task force called the Water Supply and Conservation Task Force. And one of the recommendations out of that task force was to seek funding to do an inventory such as this. And that was House Bill 2366 last session. Unfortunately, once again, we were in tough budget times, and that measure wasn't funded. But this has been a topic that has been discussed for a long time, and there are measures in the statute. In fact, in 1993, there was a provision adopted which declares a high priority the development of environmentally acceptable and financially feasible multipurpose storage. And again, we see this as one of the many tools that we can use to secure a long-term water supply for the state of Oregon. And I think particularly in a dry year like this, it just really elevates the need for the state to be out on the forefront looking for ways to meet the future needs. This recommendation to do an inventory, like Mr. Ashcombe said, has been on the table for a long time. And I think what the committee needs to understand is we do have a fair amount of information about where storage sites may be located. They're associated with various engineering reports and engineering drawings. And the problem is that over time those get dated, over time those sites may get developed, and what we really need to do is roll up our sleeves, quality assure that information, and make sure that we're putting ourselves in a position to protect those sites, that local governments have the information that they need and the state has the information that we need to protect those sites for when we need them in the future. It is true that the governor has forwarded a request on behalf of the department. It's a little bit broader than what this bill would do. It would look at water needs in the state of Oregon. It would look at potential for storage not only above ground but below ground, and also would do some analysis of how much water is available during the high flow winter months in a fashion that doesn't adversely affect stream geomorphology and other issues like that. So it's a bit broader request, but it does cover a little bit of the same ground. And again, this information is largely available. We wouldn't be going out doing original research. It would really be quality assuring the information that we have. So again, we have long supported the notion of this kind of inventory and hope that we see something like this move forward in the future.
Thank you. Questions or comments?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dangfelder.
Thank you. I guess Adam brought up a point I was going to ask is, why isn't ASR included in the current, in House Bill 2883, and maybe that's more for the proponents of the bill, but I would like to see looking at underground storage or aquifer storage recovery sites as part of this, because it could be a key element, especially as it's harder and harder to site surface water impoundments, I think, these days. So I would encourage maybe looking at an amendment to add that to the bill. But it's the chair's bill, so I guess I'd have to float it by the chair and see if he'd be amenable to that.
Go ahead,
Chair Jensen, Representative Dingfelder, you know, I don't dispute that, that's a great idea. I think the difference is that the price tag, one is sort of taking existing information and quality assuring it and making it available for use by local governments and others, which I think is the $151,000 price tag that we see on here that I think a lot of people are wringing their hands over whether we could even get that funded. When you go to the next step of doing research on aquifer storage and recovery, that I think it's a much bigger ticket item in terms of doing the kinds of research that would be necessary to identify the appropriate types of aquifers for aquifer storage and recovery. So I think they're one sort of existing research and another one is sort of new research. I think that's the difference.
Yeah, I think Adam's correct on that. I'm only familiar with one proposed study in the Umatilla Basin, and I believe that it has a price tag of about $4.5 million.
Correct.
Instead of $150,000, and therein the difference of, you know, even I don't have visions of grandeur in this particular.
That would be many
legislative
features, Mr.
session.
Not
that we wouldn't be happy with a $4.5 million study of this site, but or in this case, and but your point is well taken, Representative, and I do appreciate that. That I think, in light of the fact that we're already over appropriated in the state of Oregon as far as our water resources are concerned, we need to start looking more at some of these things, and sometimes for a state that has, you know, 2.5-3 inches of rain on a weekend over here on the west side, they think they got more water and they know what to do with, which they'll discover along toward August is probably not true. But I do appreciate, and I think that that's something we should be looking at, and I do support that concept and idea, and I'd be happy to work with you or any of the folks to try to move those agendas forward, you know, to look at the recharge issues. So thank you, Adam.
Thank you.
Kay and Katie.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, I beg your pardon.
May I ask
you
Adam
may.
A couple questions?
I'm sorry. My fault.
Thank you. $150,000 for quality assuring only, huh? Anyway, Adam, what I wanted to ask you is, as you're doing this inventory, for example, in my district we have Hag Lake, which is fed by, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is fed by the Tualatin River. So would that be a potential surface water storage site? And I don't know, maybe it was designed that way anyway when it was in, maybe, I don't really know a lot of the history behind Hag Lake, but I'm just curious, is that the type of site that you're talking about, or are we talking about going out and, I mean, you know, because I got two big reservoirs in Wilson, three big reservoirs in Wilson, at Wilsonville, that add up to about 6 million gallons. I mean, and Wilsonville is now using surface water for their water source. So, help me out here. I'm just trying to understand what it is that we're talking about.
Okay, Mr. Chair and Representative Crummell, I think it's actually both of those things. I think one is that it's sites where, you know, a geologist and a hydrologist would go out and look at the country and say, you know, if we put a dam here, we could have one heck of a reservoir. And there are plans on the books for places like that that have been evaluated over time and even in great depth, where they've gone out and they've done core samples to check the geology, to sort of look at the stability of the area. And some of those have sat on a shelf for many years because maybe at that time it wasn't cost effective or it wasn't a high value for folks at that time. Times have changed. And I think, again, a dry year like that is worth having that kind of information instead of in a book on a shelf somewhere where we all have to run around and find it in multiple agencies, that we bring that together into one place and we quality assure the information and we make sure that it's provided to a local government so that they, as they're making a decision about where to put a subdivision, they might go, oh, you know, if we put this subdivision here, that's going to preclude any opportunity for this storage facility that we may want someday. So I think that's part what it does. The other thing that it does is it can and would look at opportunities to raise existing storage facilities. And I brought this with me because I had some statistics here. That's where a lot of the new storage has come. I mean, we are issuing permits for large storage facilities, but we're also raising existing facilities. Upper Pony Creek Reservoir down in Coos Bay, and then the Barty Reservoir, 4,000 acre feet increase, and McGuire Reservoir by, again, almost 4,000 acre feet. So I think the inventory would look at what's the potential to increase the storage facilities that we already have, and what's the potential to create a new storage facility. And again, that information is spread out amongst multiple agencies in multiple documents and is not very easily accessible in one place. And that would be sort of the concept behind putting this information together.
If I may follow up, Mr. Chair, I guess I'm following what you're saying, and I appreciate it. What I'm finding interesting is that you're talking about, you know, oh, would we want to add some dams? I know they've talked about a third dam, for example, on Bull Run to serve the Portland metropolitan area. I'm having a real struggle, though, with how do we talk about adding dams on freshwater sources when we've got people running around the state talking about how we need to remove dams. For example, if you look at the four dams on the Snake River, granted they're up in Washington State, but if those were to be removed, not only do we lose hydroelectric capacity, but we also lose the storage capacity that is sitting behind those dams, which creates a hell of a lot of irrigation. We've got McNary Pool in the Chair's district, which sits behind McNary Dam. We've got the pool that sits, I guess it would be called the Dalles Pool, that sits behind the Dalles Dam, and the John Day Pool that sits behind the John Day Dam. These all help with irrigation. They all could also help with freshwater source or potable water sources for communities. As we talk about taking or breaching dams, I guess I'm getting a mixed message here. How do we on one side talk about taking dams out, but on the other hand we talk about putting dams in? So, you know, I'm at a little bit of a conflict here. So how do you rectify that?
Well, Representative Jensen, Representative Crummell, I don't disagree with you. I think there is a mixed message out there, and not all people equally embrace the idea of storing more water for the state's long-term water supply. But I think if you go back to that legislative provision that I described, ORS 536-238, I think there is a way to store water in a fashion that maybe gets all of those players on the same page in terms of addressing their various concerns in terms of fish passage and inundation of critical habitat and those sorts of other things. So I don't disagree with you that not everybody's on the same page, but I think what the point of this bill, and again, this is not the department's bill, But I think we would be missing an opportunity if we didn't at least take stock of the areas that we've identified for storage and ensured that information was available, accessible, and that those sites were protected.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that there's, I mean, I would agree that we should have a good inventory of the storage sites that are out there and that are available, and that are that can be expanded if they can be expanded. I think that we're going to have somewhat of a battle if we're going to try to put in additional sites if additional sites means adding dams, because I can see our environmental community sort of coming in glued at that. And I don't know how we resolve that conflict of yet on one hand we're going to talk about taking dams out, especially over in your neck of the woods, but on another hand we want to talk about adding dams, and that just to me is kind of a conflict. So anyway. Thank you,
Representative. I appreciate your inquiry on that, and again, let me apologize for not paying enough attention to the note that is in front of me here, which had Representative Crummell's name on it.
That's quite all right.
And comment a little bit, on the issue. I think the issue of water storage, while in some of our opinion is a kind of a common sense sort of thing and something that we need to do in light of the fact that we have a very significant water shortage in the state. With a water shortage, we're forced into this is a commodity that I beg your pardon, is absolutely essential to sustain human life, or to sustain life as such. So without doing something about it in the future, decisions are going to be made for us. Nature or something is going to make those decisions if we don't do something about it. As a consequence, it's been our effort, it's been the chair's effort to try to get us to look at this issue, to try to get us to consider it. Admittedly, sometimes a little tongue-in-cheek, perhaps, but I will make statements to the effect that I've never seen a river that didn't look like it could have a dam on it, and realizing that causes some people some consternation. But by the same token, even in somewhere, I think in some of the environmental community, we can find some very legitimate reasons for storing water, not only for human use but for fish use as well, because we have a lot of places in our state that the continued demand on the water is going to result in less and less water available for fish, and so water storage can be of benefit to fish as well as to humans. So, though admittedly, one of the things I would think would take place with an inventory of these would be looking at and making at least some initial types of assessments of what some of the environmental problems might be with the sites that we were storing. We probably have some places where we could store some water, but the environmental problems might be too great. We may have some other places where we can store water where the environmental problems may even be positive for us. And those are the questions I think we need to have answered on a serious note rather than on a... But thank you very much for the point.
You're welcome. I would agree with you, and I also appreciate Representative Dingfelder and her questions with regards to aquifer recovery recharge. That's an issue that in my earlier days as a city official were of course very important. And one of the things I'm very happy about, as many of you probably know, Wilsonville is in a critical water area of the state. And one of the things that I'm very pleased about is that since the city of Wilsonville went to the Willamette River and I know you all know what kind of a battle that was, but once they went to the Willamette River, the aquifer has recharged faster than anybody imagined that it would, and it has come up, I think it's 30 feet in the last 2 years or 2.5 years since the city went to the Willamette River. So I'm very pleased about that, and I will tell you that some of the nursery farmers around Wilsonville are extremely happy about that as well.
I'm sure they are.
Okay, thank you, Adam. Now I can move on to Kay and Katie. Katie. Please, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Jensen and members of the committee. I'm Kay Teasel with the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, and we support House Bill 2883. This would be a good step towards helping to find solutions for water shortages and help to alleviate some of the conflicts due to the rising demand of water in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, Katie Fass with Oregon Farm Bureau. I'd like to first start off maybe sharing some of the frustration that Representative Krummel has. And those discussions are happening not just in Oregon, but I think nationwide as water users talk about storage, and they talk about the ability for us to put storage facilities in and the environmental challenges that we face as well. And it's a long process. These facilities take a great deal of planning and environmental review before they're approved. But with that, our farmers and ranchers throughout the state are concerned about the state's long-term water supplies, especially in the light of our dry conditions we're currently experiencing. Sufficient water supplies are critical to the economic and environmental health of Oregon. According to U.S. Department of Agriculture's latest irrigation study, Oregon ranks third in the nation in the number of farms and ranches relying on irrigation. Nearly 45% of all farms and ranches in Oregon do some sort of irrigation, totaling about 1.9 million acres. And long-term water planning is critical to the future of Oregon's farmers and ranchers. Inadequate water supply was identified as one of the state's major environmental challenges in Oregon's Progress Board's 2000 State of the Environment report. Our surface waters during non-winter months are fully appropriated by existing out-of-stream and in-stream uses. Our groundwater resources are showing signs of overuse and are becoming unstable in many areas. And that's impacting Oregon agriculture on both the east and west side, and the nurserymen in the Willamette Valley are facing those challenges. House Bill 2883 would help accomplish an effort to address our shortage of existing supplies and our growing demand. The inventory will aid in the land use planning that's been discussed. And I think this is a supplemental piece to the federal request. Oregon Farm Bureau has also sent letters of support of the state's request for water storage funding, but that's a request. We don't know how that's going to fare federally, and I think the state needs to move forward with their own plans and not fully rely on the federal government. And with that, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Questions for Katie? Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to offer testimony on House Bill 2883? If not, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2883 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3287. And once again, leading off is Mr. Sussman.
Every day is Adam Day in Water Committee.
Record, Adam Sussman with the Water Resources Department. We certainly are covering the gamut of water issues today, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about House Bill 3287. What this bill does is it modifies the statute regarding the protest of a water right transfer. And what the bill does is limits such protest to persons that hold a water right or manage or deliver water pursuant to a water right. So I wanted to give you just a bit of background before I talk about the bill in particular. And what I wanted the committee to understand, we talked a lot about this early in the session, that the transfer of an existing water right is a key strategy to ensuring that we're meeting our long-term water supply needs. Again, just like we need water storage, we need the ability to move existing water rights around to meet those. And those transfers are really important for economic development and, in fact, for environmental restoration activities. Under the current law, when a water right transfer is submitted to the department, we put a notice either in the newspaper or in our weekly bulletin, and any person, and I want to emphasize that the way the statute is written right now is it says any person may file a protest against approval of that transfer application. And whenever we get a protest to a transfer application, we shall send it to a contested case hearing to ultimately determine whether or not the transfer will result in injury to an existing water right. And what this bill, again, would do is it would narrow that universe, if you will, of those that can protest from any person to those that are holding a water right or who manage or deliver a water right. Now, again, the proponents of the bill, I think, will be coming after me, and they can certainly help you from their perspective understand better what the purpose and nature of this bill is. But I do know from my experience that some have expressed concern that the current statutory structure is just frankly too broad. It provides too broad of an opportunity to protest water right transfers, particularly when the ultimate conclusion in approving the transfer is whether or not it causes injury to existing water rights. And I think the same concerns would tell you that this has the potential to lead to perhaps frivolous protests of water right transfers and those that may even delay projects. And from the department's perspective, I mean, obviously we understand that perspective, but the statistics that we've evaluated in our experience over time is that really hasn't been a significant problem for the department or the applicants. And I gave some examples at the bottom of the first page of the testimony where, just as an example, for the years 2000 through 2003, we issued over 900 final orders approving transfers. 33 of those were protested, and of those 33, three were protested by persons or groups that didn't hold a water right, and ultimately we negotiated a settlement of all three of those. So, yes.
Do you have any amount of, do you know the amount of time that went into those negotiations?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't specifically. In general, it would be months rather than days or weeks.
Months?
Yes, sir.
Rather than days or weeks?
Yes, sir.
Who in the state government is doing those negotiations, is involved in them?
Representative Jensen and members of the committee, in terms of resolving the protest to the transfer, that would be a member from the Water Resources Department sort of leading that discussion between the transfer applicant and the protestant and then the department.
And the that it would be one member, two members, three members from the department?
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, we just have one staff person that handles those issues, yes.
Do you get into any AG time on that?
Chair Jensen and members of the committee, I'm thinking of a particular case or two that I was personally involved in, and that did require some assistance from the Attorney General's office, yes.
I think you probably understand where the question is at, that even though the numbers seem small, they're not without their cost for us.
Understood, Mr. Chair.
While we're stopped, may I ask a question?
Sure.
So, Adam, you talked about the three that resolved, and what happened to the other 30?
Chair Jensen, Representative Tomei, I was really focusing on, you know, we have 33 protests total. Three of those 33 were ones by individuals or groups that did not hold a water right. So
right.
I was trying to, the other 33, we largely negotiate a resolution to contest to most of the activities we conduct. But in some cases, they do go through a full-blown administrative proceeding, a contested case hearing, and in some cases, up through the appeal process to the Water Resources Commission, and even in some cases to the Oregon Court of Appeals.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I assume, Representative, you're suggesting that those might have cost money, too.
Yes, but I'm reading ahead of his testimony, and it looks like there could be even more money involved if they need to go to court on these.
Okay.
So.
Thank you, Representative.
I didn't think you were supposed to read ahead.
Please.
As I was saying, that, you know, so the department's perspective is that we think the current statutory process is working, and I know all would not agree with that, and we believe that that having reasonable access to our process really maintains the integrity of the program, because while the ultimate decision by the department is whether or not this transfer would cause injury to an existing water right, we believe it's important for people to have an opportunity to engage in the process to ensure that we're correctly evaluating the law, to ensure that we're correctly evaluating the criteria associated with the application, and that we're correctly determining that this water right is, in fact, subject to transfer. And then to catch up with Representative Tomei, who was reading ahead, is that we, in our quick evaluation of the bill, Mr. Chair, we were concerned that, in fact, there could be an unintended consequence, and that perhaps if the statute were modified in this way, that those who did not hold a water right, who wanted to raise, say, a legal question or a question of how the department was applying the process, rather than doing that administratively, perhaps their only avenue would be to seek judicial review in the circuit court, in which case we would be developing records in the circuit court at a great expense to both the applicant, the department, and perhaps the protestant. We believe if we keep these contests and concerns within the administrative process as we do now, we have a much higher likelihood of resolving it without great expense, but some expense.
Questions? Thank you, Adam. Anita Whitecore?
Chair Jensen and members of the committees, I'm Anita Winkler. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Water Resources Congress. And before I actually get deep into my testimony, I do want to point out that this is one of those interesting situations where the Water Resources Congress and the Water Resources Department disagree. And it doesn't happen a lot of times, but it's kind of an interesting experience for Adam and I to be working this through in front of you instead of before we get here. The Water Resources Congress is a trade association that represents primarily special districts that deliver irrigation water throughout Oregon. We support House Bill 3287 as we believe it brings some sanity and order to the protest of water rights transfers. You have my written testimony, and I'm not going to read that. I'm just going to provide a quick summary of why we're supporting this bill.
Mm-hmm.
Standing is an important issue because it defines what party can raise issues on any water rights transaction. The issue is surfacing almost anywhere in Oregon water law right now. We, in this particular instance, it's a little bit more clear-cut, we think, because Oregon statutes actually tell the Water Resources Commission that they must approve a transfer unless there's injury to an existing water right. I don't know if there's any other statute that is that clear or that directive to the Water Resources Commission as far as their activity. What we're troubled by is the ability of any party to raise issues that wouldn't be part of the record for the Water Resources the Water Resources Commission's decision. So we're trying to take this back to those parties who can allege injury to their water rights, those holders of water rights, because it's that injury that ultimately has to be the determining factor in front of the commission. I'm not sure that I agree with Adam, and in fact, I probably, if I gave it greater thought, would disagree about the that this bill would cause increased costs in the circuit court. Standing as an issue gets litigated regularly. It was litigated in the Coos Bay North Bend Water District case. We raised it as an amicus in that case, and admittedly, that is not a water transfer. That's about a municipal permit. But in that case, the Court of Appeals was standing very broadly. There's a little bit of discussion about that in my testimony. People have tried to get standing by buying property inside an irrigation district in order to have standing as a patron in the Klamath adjudication. That was eventually thrown out because it turns out that piece of property isn't really a patron of the district because they don't get water and have no expectation of getting water. It was an issue raised and is currently an issue in front of the, I'm going to use the wrong name, I think it's the federal court, and I'm going to give the wrong title, in D.C., over the takings claim by the Klamath Basin irrigators, in which the district was able to get standing to represent all the individual irrigators under certain terms of Oregon's water law. Had the district not been able to get standing, you'd have hundreds of irrigators who'd had to file individually. Standing is just a big deal, and we think it needs to get addressed. This is the first step of trying to get a discussion going about what is a very, very complex issue. And this last week when we were here, the chair referred to a lesson in Water Law 101, and then we had a graduate course in Water Law, and I'm not sure what this is, the postdoctoral discussion in Water Law when you start attacking standing. I think I would just go back to the major point for us is that existing statutes are very clear what basis the Water Resources Commission can use for making a decision. It's expensive to the state. It's expensive to the applicants for a transfer to have to respond to all these other kinds of protests that don't form the basis, don't form the record for the commission to make an appointment. With that, I guess I would first off thank the chair for letting us get the discussion started by hearing the bill and offer to answer any questions.
I have a question.
Representative
Tolman. Anita, so the issues that you discussed, were they settled in courts? They weren't settled by the...
The issue in the Court of Appeals is on appeal. The Coos Bay North Bend, I never get the word right, is on appeal to the U.S. or to the State Supreme Court right now.
But all of these were court cases.
All of them
were
in court.
Saying? Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Amanda Rich, representing Special Districts Association of Oregon. I appreciate you letting me gate crash again and to be up here to support the testimony of the Oregon Water Resources Congress. As the committee may know, Special Districts Association has over 200 municipal water districts and over 50 irrigation districts, and that's just the core of who might be impacted by this bill. And our main reason for supporting this is we believe there is such a tight nexus between the language in the bill and the what we call the standard of review on a transfer application that the department looks at, and really don't think that it makes policy sense to allow protests on transfers when protests from folks who don't hold a water right that could be injured are not going to be considered under that standard of review. And you've heard testimony before this committee on previous days about the fact that the ability to freely transfer and share water among communities is important to our ability to serve our communities. And I think this bill works toward that end, and I appreciate the ability to testify today and urge your support.
Thank you, Amanda. Questions? Thank you. Doug Myers.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Doug Myers, representing Water Watch. Again, I'm going to skip the background because I think it's been covered adequately by the previous speakers on my testimony. But we think that this bill would would severely limit the right of the public to get their voices heard in water rate transfers. Keep in mind that when you issue a water right certificate, it essentially lasts forever, unless you don't use it for a period of 5 consecutive years. It's not like a DEQ permit, where it's renewed every 5, 10 years, whatever, by DEQ. No review takes place. You use the water, you've got it forever. The bill would greatly limit who can protest transfer applications. Currently, any person or organization with an interest in the proceeding is allowed to protest, including those working to protect in-stream water rights that are critical to Oregon's rivers and fish. Under this bill, protests would only be accepted by people who either hold a water right or manage or deliver water for a water right, and only if that right held or managed may be injured by the proposed transfer. We strongly oppose this bill for the following reasons. One, water is a public resource, and the statutes state that the states of that the waters of the state belong to the people. And the people and the public should have the ability to participate in decisions affecting the allocation and management of this resource. Allowing the public to participate in these allocation decisions does not somehow change the standard of review, but it does help to ensure the agency adheres to the statutes and policies that are relevant to the decision. The existing provisions allowing any person to protest a transfer should be retained. Two, the bill is bad public policy, and this is a little arcane, but the Water Resources Department currently holds the water right for an in-stream water right. Now, if the Water Resources Department says, should they protest against themselves? Essentially, that's my second bullet there. This conflicting role for the agency makes it critically important that members of the public be able to participate in transfer proceedings. The bill undermines the efforts of many organizations and individuals throughout the state that are working to restore water to Oregon's rivers through market transactions. In instances where in-stream water rights were created through the purchase, lease, or gift out-of-stream rights for in-stream use, the brokers of these transactions, such as the Oregon Water Trust, the board member is Chuck Norris, Representative Jensen's predecessor, person whom I, along with Representative Jensen, happen to think a great deal of personally, and the Deschutes Rivers Conservancy have an interest in protecting the in-stream right. This bill would eliminate the ability of these organizations to protest transfers that would undermine the very rights they acquired for in-stream use. The public, as beneficiary of these rights, should continue to have standing to advocate on behalf of in-stream water rights and the critical values they protect in transfer proceedings. Unfortunately, this bill would prevent the public from participating even in transfers where the rights that are held in trust for the public are threatened. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Happy to answer any questions.
Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Crummell.
I'm just curious, Doug, you know, one of the things, if I was listening correctly and understood correctly, that was alluded to a little earlier is that this bill would actually sort of qualify standing that a person might have. Why is it that I should have standing in one area of the law but not another area of the law? And what I mean by that is, so for example, if there's a land use hearing in my city, I only have standing if I attended the hearing and actually testified. At which point then later on, if I don't like the decision the governing body makes, I can appeal that decision either to LUBA or through the court process. However, in order to remain in standing, I have to testify at each step along the way. But in water law, the way the statute apparently is written now, and I'm not an attorney, but if I'm understanding it correctly, the way it's currently written is that there might be an issue over at in Representative Jensen's district. It has nothing to do with me. I mean, other than the fact that I live 240 miles to the west, it doesn't really have anything to do with me, but yet I could have standing just by going over and protesting the transfer of a water right just because I want to. I'm having a hard time seeing why there should be this discrepancy in the law, which is sort of what you're suggesting that there should be. So help me understand that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Crummell, you're getting the second team here again. Karen Russell can't be here, and I know nothing about land use law first. So your question is really asking, why should an organization like Water Watch, who doesn't hold any water rights that are directly affected, be allowed standing? Is that right, Mr. Representative?
I'm not trying to, Mr. Chair, just for clarification, I'm not trying to point out or point the finger at anybody. I'm just wondering why it should be that whether it's an organization or an individual. Because you're absolutely right. The way the statute reads now, it says any person. That means any person. That means, Representative Barnhart could come up and testify, or not even testify, but protest something. He could have come up and protested the city of Wilsonville using the Willamette, just because he could, just because it's in the statute that way, even though it has absolutely nothing to do with him. He's upstream from us, not injured, doesn't matter, shouldn't care, but yet he would have standing to come and protest if he didn't like a proceeding that was occurring in that situation. Why should an individual have standing? I guess the bottom line question that I'm asking is, why should an individual have standing in something that may or may not concern them, when in other parts of the statute it is very apparent that in order to protest something you have to have standing, and you have standing by participating, testifying, and so on and so forth, along with being able to show injury.
Mr. Chair and Representative Crummell, your question is, one, why are there differing laws for land use and for water and for... am I understanding that one right?
Sure. Why should there be that kind of discrepancy?
Beats me. I do not understand. I don't understand why water rights are held forever. Why aren't they reviewed every 5 to 10 years, like the DEQ does for water pollution control permits? There's lots of discrepancies in the law, and the reason that a person should be allowed to protest in defense of an in-stream water right is, number one, that in-stream water right belongs to the people of the state of Oregon. All water does. And therefore, the people who own that water right should have the right to protest. And I don't take it personally that Water Watch is involved, or I'm proud that Water Watch protests some of these rights, very few of them apparently, but I'm proud that they do, because it does tend to make the agency and others say, wait a minute, and we'll negotiate our way out of it, and they do.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, Doug, you've just answered what was going to be my question, or just... reading the second page of your testimony on the first bullet, water is a public resource. And in the second bullet, you mentioned that under Oregon law, in-stream water rights are held in trust by the Water Resource Department for the people of Oregon, and you give the ORS number. But I guess I've never seen it stated quite that clearly, and I guess that is maybe how... I would respond to Representative Crummell that water is owned by, it is a public resource, and apparently it says in this law that it is owned by the people of Oregon. Am I reading that correctly?
Yes.
Thank you.
Right. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to talk about and perhaps respond a little bit to Representative Crummell's question,
You know we're in trouble when he's getting the two of us mixed.
That's right.
He's going a little long.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Please.
Thank you. I was trying to figure out, as I was listening to the testimony in this bill, whether there were some rights that were not likely to be protected by holders. Because if there were no rights that were not likely to be protected by holders, then a bill like this is perfectly appropriate. Standing should be limited to those people who have an interest in the issues that are before the agency or the court. But in this case, the material presented by Water Watch, I think, makes it extremely clear that there are issues that are not protected by holders. And the second bullet point, as referred to by Representative Flamay, and perhaps even more significantly, the third and fourth bullet points, I think, establish very clearly that there are rights that are not represented by holders, and therefore the only sensible way of getting at those rights is to allow the public to complain and to establish standing through these proceedings. I would point out to the committee that the example posited by Representative Crummell about his land use testimony is necessary in order to establish standing is not a rule that deals with the question of whether a person has standing or not, but whether or not they have a right to exercise standing at a second or third level. You have to go in at the first hearing in order to have standing in the second hearing. That's a completely different issue than the one we're talking about here. I certainly agree that it's a crucial for us to talk about when people have standing or when people ought to have standing. This is one of those clear examples where the public right is not represented, is important in the issue, and cannot be represented by other holders. And therefore we need to leave standing open for members of the public to come in and complain. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Other? It strikes me with this issue of who has standing, and ultimately in the thing of who has standing is who can sue. That's kind of what it gets down to is the bottom line. Seems like, no offense meant to any of the attorneys that might be on the committee, but it seems like we have...
All one of you?
We have a very litigious society. If there were some way for the laws to be written so that the courts could exercise some common sense, and if there were some penalties, and that's not necessarily for just the issue of water law that we're dealing with here, but a whole bunch of other laws that we have. If there were some significant penalties for frivolous use of the courts to attempt to address an agenda, might go a long ways to making this debate unnecessary. But it does seem we do have a lot of frivolous use of the courts, and that costs us a lot in a number of ways. So it's neither a pro or a con, I guess, as far as the chair is concerned for this vote, but we are really dealing with an issue here that is greater than just the body of water law that we're talking about. And I understand Water Watch's position and concern on this, and we appreciate their concerns with it. Thank you very much, Doug.
Thank you, and I will pass on Representative Barnhart's compliment about the efficacy of the testimony, written testimony. It was done by Karen Russell, not me.
Thanks. Mr. Costasan. You've been extremely quiet all day today.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I'm not necessarily trying to defend the land use laws. I was just using an example of where there was standing and where there wasn't.
I appreciate that, Representative Crummell, that, and it, a good example it was.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
This is going to be an interesting discussion on the part of Mr. Costasan. We find you in a position of having to agree with somebody that one party or the other that you don't normally agree with.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Richard Costasan with Water for Life. I try to agree with almost everybody all the time. There might be some dispute on that, but I give it a try. In terms of the issue of representational standing, which this bill is front and center associated with that issue, I think there'd be three cases that I would encourage the committee to look at, and the most recent is the case of Water Watch versus the Water Resources Commission, Coos Bay, North Bend. But the two previous court cases would be 1996, a Portland case of Local 290 versus DEQ and the Environmental Quality Commission, coupled with a 1996 case of United Taxpayers versus Keesley.
Versus?
Keesley, Secretary of State.
Okay.
And those three court cases, I think, would provide some interesting information with respect to the issue of representational standing. But with respect to the bill, I put a packet of information together. The first is House Bill 3287, as introduced. Under your fourth tab, you will find that House Bill 3331 was introduced last session, and this mirrors that legislation in the sense of providing an avenue for districts to maintain standing in a transfer request. 3331 was referred to the House Judiciary Committee in 2003. It received a hearing in April, and it remained there throughout the duration of the session. But if you look at your transfer statutes, you will find, and I would agree with previous speakers, that the operative question is one of injury to existing rights. That is clear throughout those statutes. I've also attached pertinent administrative rules. Those are found at tab 3. And then the last two tabs, tab 5 and tab 6, are of interest. What 3287 would do is provide districts and afford districts standing in terms of a transfer protest. This is, again, targeted, I believe, and right centered on the debate that arose with the Fort Benoit Irrigation District. And in those briefs, you'll find the department's opening brief and finding of fact by the administrative law judge. But it was determined there that the district did not maintain the ability to protest the desire of a district patron to transfer his point of diversion. In terms of the bill itself, if it's the desire of the committee to narrow the scope of who may protest, and with the understanding that the focus today is on a question of injury to existing rights, we would suggest that we take a look at the new language inserted in subsection 6 on page 2 and orient it and narrow the focus even to a greater degree. And we would delete or strike the language on line 13 after water right, or who manages or delivers water pursuant to a water right. And I think this would eliminate the conflict of a situation as we experienced with Fort Benoit. So the focus again would go right back to a person who holds a water right. and who could claim injury to an existing right. Representative Barnhart raised a very interesting question with respect to in-stream water rights, and Representative Tomei had a couple of comments. With respect to in-stream water rights, I would encourage a review of the provisions found at 540-530. There is, in current statute, protections for in-stream water rights. If a transfer exists or a transfer application is submitted, if after hearing or examination, the commission would find that it could injure an existing right, the commission and the department would have to go back to the agency that initially requested that in-stream right, whether it be parks, whether it be DEQ, or whether it parks, DEQ, and there's a third.
Richard.
Fish and Wildlife, excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Mr. President. What about Farmer Jones? Could Farmer Jones request the in-stream water right?
If, Mr. Chair, I believe Farmer Jones could indeed request an in-stream right.
And in that case, they'd have to go back to him?
It would be Farmer Jones's in-stream right.
Okay. Proceed.
But I believe those provisions that, again, found at 540-530 speak to the protection of in-stream rights. And that really is about it. As currently drafted, Water for Life opposes 3287. We find that it conflicts with previous findings and a longstanding tradition that basically the operative question in terms of transfer is the individual who could claim injury to an existing right. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Richard? If question,
well, I do, Mr. Chair. But after
go
you
ahead.
Go, please, would be fine.
Please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Richard, what you're suggesting then is that instead of any person having standing to protest the transfer of a right, and moving from that sort of to the narrower a person who actually holds a right, or who is in the case of a district that distributes water from various water rights. What you're suggesting is that it would only be a person who holds a water right and can claim injury that would have protest right under the amendment or under the suggestion that you're making. Is that correct?
Chair Jensen and Representative Crummell, that would be correct. And again, we believe that would follow suit with basically how a transfer application works in terms of a protest. Ultimately, the question, the major, most predominant question, is a question of injury to existing rights.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Did you want to comment, Adam?
If I may. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, Adam Sussman. I just wanted to comment and make sure that the committee understood that this issue really cuts both ways, that as you're thinking about various amendments such as the one that we just heard, is that there are times where there may be an organization that doesn't hold a water right that may want to engage in this process because they're concerned about an in-stream water right, as we heard. There may be times when an organization that doesn't hold a water right may want to engage in this process because the department is creating, in their opinion, a type of water use through a water right transfer for a particular wildlife refuge that they may think is unlawful, and they may want to engage in the process to ensure that the department is evaluating the law correctly and making lawful decisions. So I just wanted the committee to understand that this issue cuts on various aspects of the water user community and their interests in what the department does.
Thank you. Appreciate the comment there. Do I understand, Richard, that if the bill were amended to delete on line 13, or who manages or delivers water pursuant to a water right, you would be comfortable with the bill?
Mr. Chair, as I tried to indicate earlier, if it is the intent of the committee to narrow the focus or to clarify the existing statutory provisions as they relate to transfers, and getting to the point that we are trying to determine injury to an existing right, whether that be an in-stream right or whether that be an out-of-stream appropriation, we could, again, we would support the deletion of the language dealing with the management and delivery of water. I think that is problematic, and long term, I think that language would lead to probably more challenges, whether they be administrative or judicial.
Okay. And Richard, you spoke something about the court cases. What would have been the impact in those court cases had this law been in place as written?
Mr. Chair, I don't think this bill would have had an impact on any of, with the exception of the current case pending in terms of Water Watch and the North Bend Coos Bay situation. The previous two cases that I indicated were relevant, spoke to the issue of, quote, representational standing, not specifically addressing the issue of water, water management, water regulation. I don't think they would have a direct impact, but the findings of those two previous cases, basically suggesting that unless the law was explicitly providing an avenue for individuals to maintain standing, the court was not going to insert language that was not there. If we were to go back, I believe, Mr. Chair, it was 1997 legislation, and it was a House Bill 3487, I believe, was specifically introduced to address the issue of standing in terms or with respect to transfers. And that legislation was introduced but not approved. So I think the question again and the focus is the committee's direction in terms of if they desire to narrow the scope and clarify the existing statutory provisions with respect to standing. Excuse me, with respect to transfers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Kay, again, please.
Chair Jensen and members of the committee, my name is Kay Teasel with the Oregon Cattlemen Association, and we are opposed to House Bill 3287 because it gives organizations that represent water right holders within irrigation districts special privileges over organizations such as the Oregon Cattlemen Association and Water for Life that also represent water right holders who may or may not be part of an irrigation district. Many of our members are water right holders who may request that we intervene on their behalf. This bill would take away our ability to do so, but then gives other organizations, such as irrigation districts, special privileges by allowing them to file a protest without actually owning a water right that is being harmed. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. Any questions?
Thank you very much, Kate. Seeing no one else to testify on House Bill 3287, we'll close the public hearing on 3287, and we will carry HJR 45 over to our Wednesday meeting. And with that, we are adjourned.